and to Washington, D.C., and Linda Kenyon. Good morning, Linda.
Good morning. Good morning from the White House. Things are a little bit tense here today.
Gosh, I can only imagine. This is a major conflict, it looks like, it's shaping up, and it could escalate into something very serious that affects the whole world.
Yeah, we're talking about Israel's airstrikes against Iran yesterday, taking out multiple sites around the country, including Iran's main nuclear enrichment facility. Now, Israel had warned it was going to do this. The United States, President Trump, especially yesterday, warned that if Iran didn't give up its nuclear program, there could be problems and that it needed to bend on that issue. He also had previously ordered all U.S. embassy personnel in the Middle East region to leave, saying that he didn't know if anything was going to happen imminently, but that he didn't also want to be the one responsible for not getting people out of harm's way, where lives could be lost in the event that there was some kind of an attack against Iran. The president also said that he did not want Israel to do anything at this time because we were in talks with Iran on its nuclear program, and the talks seemed to be doing, by all indications, in air quotes here, okay. In fact, there was another round of talks expected in just a couple of days. Those talks have now been canceled. And Israel says that it did what it had to do. Not only did it take out those nuclear facilities, but it also took out the paramilitary Revolutionary Guard General Hossein Salami and the Chief of Staff of the Iranian Armed Forces, General Mohammad Bagheri, both confirmed dead. And it's now kind of a case where everybody is sort of holding their breath to see what's going to happen next. Iran, as you can well imagine, very upset about this situation and promising retaliation.
Well, Iran was not in the best condition to survive something like this anyway, but one of the things that's legendary in this world is the superiority of the intelligence department at inside Israel.
Yes, and that does put Iran, as you point out, in a huge disadvantage. It also gave Israel an opportunity because of its superior intelligence capabilities. It gave them a bit of an advantage in terms of being able to smuggle weapons into Iran ahead of those strikes. Israeli security forces confirmed that they did, in fact, do that through the Mossad spy agency. So, you know, the spying, the intelligence network on Israel is unrivaled, really, and served Israel quite well and did allow for this preemptive strike.
Does it seem to you from this reporting that Iran was caught flat-footed in this?
I don't know if they were caught flat-footed per se. They may have expected something was coming. They may not have expected the scale of it may not have been able to do anything about it, quite frankly. Saber rattling is one thing, but actually being able to carry out particular issues, particular actions, quite another. And Iran has been very vocal and, you know, saying that there would be a lot of military action from Iran, but Iran is not necessarily in a position to handle the kind of retaliation necessary given the scale of the Israeli opposition, then Israel is not going to hold back when it comes to defending itself.
Now, I've been watching a series, I think it's on Netflix, it's called David, and it's about the House of David and the earliest time with the what is now the country of Egypt, or I should say Israel. But what it's kind of shows to me is the nature of the fact that it seems like Israel has always been a nation that somebody's attacking. I say the Hebrew people, the Israeli people. It just seems like that they have always been on the defense, and they have been, throughout history, have been scourged. And the latest, at least in modern history, would be the Holocaust. And so you can understand, I think, why Israel is so so dependent upon their defense, and so much of their energies are put toward this sort of a thing happening. And now they've taken the offensive. They're not just going to sit back and be defensive now. My question, I guess, Linda, from your experience and all that you've reported, are they really under that much attack in Israel?
Well, there was, of course, the Hamas attack against Israel. There's the ongoing attacks from pretty much all of its neighbors. Israel is a very small country surrounded by enemies. And, you know, a lot of those countries do not recognize Israel's right to exist. The conflicts alone with the Palestinian, people, not necessarily the people per se, but Hamas, is just one of many fronts that Israel has to confront. And so, yes, they're constantly on the defense. They do not take things lightly, and you can imagine why. And when threatened, they will respond.
I'm listening to Prime Minister Netanyahu yesterday. It's pretty clear that at least he and his party that's in control believe that Iran's goal is to annihilate Israel.
Well, it's been said. I mean, it's been said time and time and time again. Israel has no right to exist, and death to Israel. I mean, we hear that all the time from people in the Middle East and those who oppose Israel across the globe, shouting death to America, death to Israel. You know, the U.S. and Israel are allies, and so right now the situation in the Middle East involving Iran, plus all of the other tensions going on involving Israel at this point, have created a very, very tense situation. And, you know, whether there's going to be retaliation against not just Israel, but U.S., because the U.S. has, most of the weapons that Israel's using have been supplied by the U.S., and also because we are a friend of Israel, so they could try and take out us, but that is unlikely to happen. Right. We do have various naval vessels in the region that are positioning and are on standby.
Well, bringing this back to the home front now, it appears that unless something changes in the courts by noon California time today, the California National Guard will be under control of the commandant, which would be the governor of California.
Yeah, not necessarily. A federal judge did direct President Trump to return control to California over National Guard troops. By the way, that order does not pertain to the U.S. Marines that have been deployed by the president to the region. All over the protests that have been happening against the ICE raids in the Los Angeles area. Now, the judge did rule that the president had overstepped his authority and that the National Guard troops are under the control of the state in which they reside. However, that ruling was immediately stayed. The Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals put a temporary hold on that order, and that has allowed time for the administration to appeal. Now, originally, the order was supposed to go into effect at noon local time, but now this appeal is going to keep things the way they are until Tuesday, and that's when a hearing will be set by an appeals court.
So this is kind of a later development than what we had had before, because we had understood that. Well, I don't know what we'd understood. That's why I'm glad you told us. So it looks like that the appeal is going to put everything on hold at least till Tuesday. Is that what I'm getting?
That's what we're getting now. And, of course, you know, this is a moving target. So stay tuned. Strap in.
Yeah, I suppose. In Washington, D.C., there's got to be a lot of talk, and I would imagine that Homeland Security Secretary Kristi Noem is probably dancing on the carpet this morning.
Well, Kristi Noem had a moment yesterday. So did the state of California. She was in California she was having a briefing, a news conference about the use of National Guard troops in Los Angeles, which the governor and the mayor of Los Angeles have both said were not necessary, and merely seemed served to escalate the situation. And as she was talking, U.S. Senator Alex Padilla from California, who happened to be down the hall, heard that she was having a news conference in the same building where he was trying to get, he was attending a briefing on what was going on in his state. And so he entered the press conference room and stood on the sidelines and then attempted to ask Kristi Noem a question. That was viewed as a sign of aggression. He was quickly shoved out of the room by security, forced face down on the floor and handcuffed. Never seen anything like that happen to a U.S. senator. It has been viewed here in Washington as completely shocking. It was, now there's a lot of point and counterpoint about that. Noem says, the Homeland Security Secretary says, he did not identify himself as a U.S. senator. However, he did. There's video and audio showing that he did. He said, "I'm Senator Alex Padilla, and I have a question." Noem says that he lunged at the lectern where she was speaking. I watched that video over and over and over again. I did not see a lunge. You know, maybe it felt that way to her. I'm not sure. But nonetheless, the treatment of a U.S. senator is one thing. One of the statements that came out from Senator Padilla afterward was, and this is a quote, "If that's what they do to a United States senator with a question, imagine what they can do to any American that dares to speak up." So, yeah, if they'll do that to a senator, imagine what they'll do to a reporter asking a question, right?
And yesterday they did something in Congress that I'm not quite sure. Perhaps you can help me understand what a dissent is. Apparently they were able to cut off funding for, several places. It's like around $11 billion, something like that.
Oh, you're talking about the rescissions package?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was basically, Congress's way of clawing back, if you will, money that was not spent. The money was not spent because the Department of Government Efficiency, or the DOGE, cut that money and fired all the employees at particular agencies, for example, at U.S. Agency for International Development. There were other cuts, of course, in funding to public broadcasting, for example, and to other government agencies and departments. Public broadcasting is not a government agency or department. And so this was, funding that was flagged by the Department of Government Efficiency, or the DOGE, previously led by Elon Musk. And what Congress did in the House is it took those funds, which was, earmarked, and said, okay, now we're going to make it permanent. We're going to make this law. That's what they did with this thing called the rescissions package. House Speaker Mike Johnson said that it's just the first of more rescissions packages to codify, if you will, the cuts of the DOGE, meaning those people who lost their jobs and those people who worked at agencies that are being eliminated will not get them back, and neither will those agencies be returned.
Is that the end of the story, or does the Senate have a word on this?
Well, the Senate still has to vote on it, and I'm sure there's going to be some controversy in the Senate. The Senate is controlled by Republicans, as is the House, but it was a tight vote in the House, and it's probably going to be a tighter vote in the Senate.
Linda, as always, we appreciate your great reporting, and thank you for drilling down for us this morning.
You're welcome. Stay tuned.
Okay.